Welcome back to the Right to the Source podcast. My name is Robin Harrison and I'm here for episode 10 with Mr. Ed Birkin. Ed, we're in double figures. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic, Robin, and it's so great to be back with you. It just feels
excellent.
It feels though because you did one a day early last week and now I've had, you know, those 8 days apart. It just feels too long.
8 days apart?
Well, actually, no, I did see you at IGB Live, didn't I?
Yeah. We were at the event together. Yeah. In lockstep for 3 days, essentially.
Maybe it's more PTSD than missing you, then.
Stockholm syndrome, yeah.
It's just a weird feeling I'm getting, so. Anyway, yeah, on the podcast.
Yes, and that's a very interesting top you're wearing there. Tell us more.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, whether I was proud to be picked or more tricked into playing for the IGB team at the LATAM Media-sponsored football event on the Friday, which was... It was fantastic. The downside was it was just after the IGB Affiliate Awards. So having done a BAM finish to get up at 7:30 to play football wasn't ideal. But look, the awards was a great event and they did a 90s theme. So there's a bit of a Blur, Oasis and kind of battle of the bands.
That feels very timely.
Yeah, well, Oasis now coming back and doing their shows. So, and actually for those of you keen listeners to our podcast, the theme tune we have was actually recorded by a friend of mine who's a massive Oasis fan, who said that he couldn't really tell me how the show was because he spent most of the time trying not to cry. He was that emotional. Personally, I turned down tickets for free because I think he'll probably be a bit shit. Not that I don't like Oasis, just, you know, all this nostalgia stuff does it always work. And you know what the best bit about the best of the bands that I found? The Blur
was
Oasis
that?
Was good. When the Spice Girls came on at the end, now that is true 90s.
Oh, yes. The Spice Girls are iconic. The Spice Girls were brilliant. And so I do have a slightly interesting Oasis story. When I was in France, I was at Rock en Seine, which is a big music festival near Paris. And that was meant to be headlined by Oasis. But that was when they had a big Barney backstage and broke up. And I think, as I recall, Buck Party replaced them, who both of the Gallaghers had said were terrible. And I think, like, banned off University Challenge, so they were very delighted to be replacing them.
I'm not Buck Party. But anyway, had the IGB Affiliate Awards, great event. You know, obviously, some of the people there were upset they didn't win, and, you know, some of the winners are maybe more justified than others, but everyone's got a different view on that. And the next day, we turned up to this football, so... Half time on the sidelines, half time I have to come on because one of your senior reporters had to make a quick exit off the pitch. I think maybe overindulged at the Affiliate Awards the night before. So I come on up front. Now just picture the scene.
Okay.
Just outside the box, the ball comes. He faints left, faints right. The defender is absolutely bamboozled. Hits this shot, flying for the bottom corner. The match is finally poised at 1-1. About to go in, the crowd's about to celebrate. It then hits my legs as I'm standing up front. And goes out for a goal kick. We lose the match 4-1. I actually contributed a negative goal to the team. And at that point, I realised why I hadn't played up front since I was 11 years old. And when I moved back into defence, my more natural position, you know, got a bit of a shout out for Gary Neville, number two. Yeah, we won the second game. But unfortunately, at that point, I went out on goal difference because of my negative contribution in the first game. But it was, you know, it was a good event, well organised by LATAM Media Group. You know, I think Altenar were the winners, so shout out to them.
Dan Altenar.
Probably need to fact check that. I'm pretty sure that's what they said. At that point, I'd already left and gone home, being the team guy that I am. But anyway,
left in disgust.
That's enough.
Stormed out the stadium.
I must admit, there weren't many people on my team doing Heineken as a other beers are available as a... you know, pre-match refreshment, but you know,
I'm not sure about I'm not sure about the isotonic properties of Heineken. Now there is a non-alcoholic German beer called Erdinger, which for a while was marketing itself as an isotonic drink. So you could have gone for that, a nice kind of a Weiss beer.
I could have done, but one, I don't like Weiss beer, and two, it probably wouldn't have gone as well with the chicken wings that I was using for pre-match nutrition.
No oranges, no half-time oranges, just half-time wings.
Not there. But anyway, let's talk about some stuff. What's happened? So forget about IGB Live. We talked about that for 2 weeks. It's gone now. Other shows are available. You're probably going to be launching ICE in the next couple of weeks because that's what you seem to spend most of your life, Clarion, doing.
Well, in an events company, we tend to do
clearly not creating digital contents.
We create a lot of excellent digital content that's widely read by the industry, and let's face it, fuels this podcast, because obviously one of the things that we hastily discussed about 3 minutes before we hit record was what we're going to talk about, and obviously looking at the website, tracking the market, I should say, rather than just hastily looking at the website. The Netherlands jumps front of mind. Obviously, I think we've touched on it in the past, the situation where you essentially have a regulator that feels like they're quite constructive, wants to work with the industry, an industry that is excited to take advantage of the opportunity. And then crashing into that, you have politicians and political pressure, which, let's face it, is largely derailing the market. So a few interesting things over the past week. Obviously, from the 1st of July, Bannon's sponsorship came into force, so any kind of gambling branding is going to be kind of ripped off the shirts of the football teams, with the usual exceptions. So Eurojackpot, run by the Dutch National Lottery, that seems to be immune from this. And, you know, there's parallels with something like the UK newspaper The Guardian said that it will no longer take kind of gambling advertising, aside from lotteries. Now, lotteries are obviously a force of public good. They are something that is designed to raise money, but some of the products, let's be honest, are not that far away from the type of gambling products that people are very keen to ban. So I'm thinking in particular scratch cards. Yes, as a physical scratch card, you'd have to buy them in a big stack. I was in Tesco yesterday and someone was doing just that. If you put these products online, it's essentially revealing a series of numbers or symbols, using a random number generator. It's not that far away from slots. So I'm always a bit uncomfortable with that lottery carve-out.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point because, was it 94, the UK National Lottery? I know it was a big thing, the sociable thing on TV, and the lottery is a big market. So data alert, we have been told some people would like some more data points, so rather than us just talking craps. You know, we have the global lottery market in 2025 worth $160 billion. Of that, $25 billion is online. So an online penetration is a lot lower for lottery than others. One, because it went online later, like US, hardly any of it's online. But also just the scale of the land-based business. Okay, UK, it's over 50%, so, you know, things. But you are right. With scratch cards, online scratch cards, you know, it is, there's a very thin line between online scratch cards and slots. And so, you know, the carve-out lottery, especially if society lotteries, health lotteries, all doing good and raising money for charity, you know, rather than the big nasty corporations of gambling. But at the same time, I get your point about if you're advertising, you know, you're allowed to effectively advertise what is an RNG online scratch card / type of slots with just a different graphic. You know, is that any different to the rest?
And
that's a question
to ask.
That's not an H2 view. However, what you made me think about with the Netherlands, someone said to me, you know, it's as if they're trying to, you know, it's as if they regret it. It may have even been you, but I'll say it's someone intelligent.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
They're just trying to, they've realised they don't want legalised gambling and they're trying to outlaw it, and that's just going to, you know, chuck stuff offshore. I mean, our numbers, again, data, don't too much in it, but 61% of the market was onshore last year. Obviously, the massive decline in deposits and GGR since the new rules came into place last year. We've got it 50% this year. As he talks about the advertising ban, sponsorship ban, we've got it going down to 47% in 2026 and actually going down to 45% onshore. And so we actually just don't see the onshore doing it. Pinsel said, you know, with gambling, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. And the reason I wanted to say that is talking about 90s bands, Genie in a Bottle, Christina Aguilera.
Was that song. The 90s? I mean, that was more kind of turn of the millennium.
Yeah. No, okay. Well, I was probably far too old to be listening to that kind of music at that point.
Yeah, yeah. I'm interested that you know, A, who Christina Aguilera is, and B, what her first number one was.
I mean, I didn't know that was her first number one, but thank you for clarifying.
I do, I can.
I think anyone born in the 80s knows the song Dirty, just as they know Hit Me Baby One More Time by Britney, both iconic songs at the time.
Oh, yeah.
But neither of which are related to the Netherlands. So, Netherlands, yeah. Look, they're trying to, it's this fine line we talked about, balancing player protection, you know, with keeping people on shore. And quite frankly, that's a job that should be left to regulators who spend, you know, their workday doing this, rather than politicians who don't really, in general, understand the market and just have some, you know, ideals that aren't are completely detached from reality. But I feel as though you always have a go at the Netherlands and Germany.
Yeah, probably, I mean...
Probably because they have the, you know, shit regulation.
Well, yeah, I mean, the regulations do need improved. I mean, like, what, another thing that came out at the end of last week, so while you were a... scoring own goals in a football pitch.
No, I didn't score an own goal. In fact, I saved a lot of goals in defence, but no, I did block one.
Yeah,
I would also like to take this opportunity to say that the commentators, the live stream didn't work brilliantly. The commentators were giving us nicknames because no one had given their actual names. And while I like to think that I was being compared to Gary Neville in the bit of the live stream that's down, one of your colleagues got referred to as Ed Sheeran, which he was very upset about until I pointed out that actually I would have gone with Ron Weasley, so he should be pretty happy with that.
Is Ron Weasley Harry Potter?
Yes. No, well, okay. He's Harry Potter's friend.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, he's a personality from Harry Potter. It's not something that tends to fall within my reading list.
No, Christina Aguilera's first number one is.
So. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, that is excellent. Yeah. So while you were swanning about a football pitch, getting a...
In the way of other people's prowess.
Yeah, yeah. So getting in the way of other people's prowess. So when you were blocking your own team's shots and eating chicken wings, I was obviously working and just helping the team out with some news content. And one of the things that we covered last week on Friday was a report from the Kansspel Autoriteit, the KSA, on the impact of deposit limits in the Netherlands. So the way that was reported was it's led to an overall 31% decline in player losses.
Sounds like a good thing, yeah?
Well, if you call it player losses, if you call it GGR, obviously that changes the kind of the sheen somewhat.
Yeah, but, you know, for politicians, they look at it and go, we've reduced player losses, or we've reduced the size of the gambling market. They're happy. That's what they aim to do.
Yeah.
What they don't realise is what's happened on the other side. These people have not just stopped gambling.
Well, this is it, because the other thing that this report did flag was that there is an increase in searches for illegal sites. So it's one of these kind of interesting ones in that there's something which can be dressed up as essentially a kind of a benefit to consumer protection. You know, consumers are no longer just, you know, throwing money into regulated sites. However, then immediately you've got a good indication of where that money's going. So all this is moving offshore. And I forgot to ask you earlier, actually, I'm just going to chuck this in now, totally at random. For that global lottery market, do you have any kind of breakdown of scratch cards?
Yes, Robin, I do. And if you give me a global summary here, one sec to look at it, because I don't have all the answers completely off the top of my head. Sales and gross win is going to be not massively. Oh, let's go with gross win. So we have... percentage instance globally is 33%. Now online, you know, that may be different. Some will have more, some will be less, so you can't say 33% of instant sales online. We'd have to do some more digging on our data to get that actual figure, although we do have it. But yeah, I mean, a third of it is instance. Now if we look at, let's say, some different markets, let's go to North America, you're looking at percent instance being 51% this year, whereas you look at LATAM and it is only 8%. So it does really differ by market. The US is by far the highest instance.
Interesting.
Which is slightly surprising, I suppose, given that you have such a big Powerball and Mega Millions, but
again,
instances are pretty big there. But then the US, you know, there's online is the lottery penetration online. It's only a handful of states that actually allow online lottery.
So, that's true.
It is pretty small.
Now let's move on to a different market, and one where I don't think we've actually talked about it before. So New Zealand, the one next to Australia, where they made Lord of the Rings, Flight of the Conchords, and Chris Wood, Nottingham Forest legend Chris Wood.
Okay.
Niche. I don't think that's that niche. Okay. He's a Premier League footballer.
England cricket coach. Anyway, let's not go into everything.
Yeah. Jonah Lomu, Dan Carter. I mean, Richie McCaw. We could get into a bit of a rabbit hole with this.
We need to stop talking. In fact, we need to.
So Lordy, the singer.
I met three listeners to our podcast. Okay.
Oh no.
When I was in IGB. Okay.
They admitted to listening to it.
And they said they enjoyed it. So actually, in case they're listening, Javier, shout out. Also, well played at the football. Fantastic.
Yeah, Javier, great guy.
There's another one who will remain nameless, who said, please don't ever mention my name on the podcast. After you mentioned Uriah Rennie, he passed away 2 days later. So we
shout out to them.
We do need to perhaps think about, when it's about Jonah Lomu, you know, what a player, unfortunately. So he's passed away, so we can't do that. But we perhaps need to kind of keep track of people and name-dropping and what happens. But I'd also like to give a shout-out to Rosie Brewster, in case she's hearing this, who claims she listens to our podcast. And when I asked her something we talked about in the last three episodes, she said, after a long pause, Brazil. Which was a good guess, but wrong. So we will see if she mentions this.
Yeah, I think it's also worth shouting out a Rosie for the IGB Executive Lounge at the show.
That was, yeah.
I mean, look, obviously, you know, I work for Clarion, I work with Rosie, but, you know, so an element of bias here, but it is a fantastic kind of addition to the shows. And I think with the networking, the way it just brings people together.
The networking was very good. Yeah. I'm a big fan of IGB Exec. So, I mean, it helps that I don't necessarily get charged as your principal data partner to be part of it. But even if I were before that, I would have happily paid, because you have some great networking, great events, great food. But I still don't believe she listens to the podcast. So this is all going to be thanks and never gets back to her. But speaking about Brazil, we'll quickly touch on it before we go back to New Zealand, as you talked about. I mentioned Brazil, so we'll keep it quick.
All right. Let's talk about Brazil, the latest twist.
By the time you have put this on the site, probably last week, the Senate were discussing the casino bill, which a lot of people were expecting to go, thought had a good chance of passing, and now they've added on bingos and Yoga de Bicho. And the 5 second thing is, it doesn't have the votes, and it's probably not happening for a while. Is that your
take? Yeah, I mean, it was... Honestly, throughout this process, obviously, you know, I've been hopeful of it happening, but I have to admit, it felt very split as to whether it would actually happen. You know, a lot of people were saying, similar to what US states said post-sports betting regulation, they wanted to see how the new product bedded in. But I think also, considering the efforts to raise the tax and then limit advertising, I think it just shows, it's basically just illustrating a trend that I think is continuing. Countries, legislators are less likely to regulate new forms of gambling than they are to try and get more out of the existing forms. You know, in my mind, I mean, like, where I think these things are potentially going, and where I could imagine that the industry kind of shifts its efforts, with this longer tail between, you know, new product regulation, people might look towards omnibus bills. I mean, obviously, the Brazilian bill, which included land-based casino, Jogo de Bicho, racing, bingo, all these products, that was essentially an omnibus bill, but just for land-based. Now, you've taken out the immediate, you know, kind of like pressure, which is the online part. That's already been done separately. It'd be interesting to see if you have some figures on this, just to give people an idea of the trajectory. But if you look at the US, my mind does jump back to Pennsylvania. Obviously, they worked through this omnibus bill, which, you know, covered casino, covered, I think, slots in the airport, covered online, covered sports betting, covered a lot of products in one fell swoop. Now, obviously, these kind of bills are going to take longer to put together. There's a lot of different, you know, potentially competing interests. It might be a years long process, but that then is justified by a massive leap forward, because it feels like whatever happens is going to be a years long process anyway. So it feels like, you know, kind of like omnibus legislation covering multiple channels would actually be a solution to this rather than going piecemeal.
Yeah, I think it's for each of them. It took, I mean, depending on when you count it as starting, it took 10 years, 15 years, some people say 8 years, however long, depending on the starting point, for them to pass online sports and iGaming in Brazil.
Yeah.
Okay. And they got it launched. You know, if casino takes another 5 years, it doesn't happen. You know, if you'd put it as an omnibus bill, would anything have happened? Or would it be in the same situation as with it unregulated? Which some people may prefer. So I think for each market, it's different. Like adding Yoga de Bicho, is that what stopped, you know, the casino bill? Is it adding bingo? Is it none of that? You know, should they have done it separately? They've kind of gone for a land-based omnibus, and maybe that's what's held it back. I wasn't listening to the Senate thing. We probably should do more with guests. We should get your LATAM liaison on, and she can tell us exactly why she thinks the bill hasn't got the votes, and whether an omnibus thing is part of the reason, whether piecemeal would be better or not.
Yeah, that could be an interesting one. But now, back to New Zealand. Other famous New Zealand people include, mentioned briefly, the singer Lord or Lordy. I'm not sure you pronounce it.
I mean, I always think that if you don't know how to pronounce their name, it's probably an indication they're not 100% famous.
I know, I think she is quite famous. She was playing at Glastonbury. I think she's for a different generation. Ryan Nelson, New Zealand centre-back.
Kind of feel, and normally I'm happy to talk as much shit as possible, but I do have a call in 8 minutes. So should we talk about New Zealand gambling market?
Yeah, we should. So okay. Obviously there's been the casino legislation now filed, 15 licences, opens up the online market, but obviously with the carve-out for sports betting, which is a monopoly under TAB and Entain. Now, with this market, I mean, I think based on H2 figures, it's something like only 10% is, you know, kind of like currently onshore. I mean, obviously, because there is no legislation for most of these products. But I was keen to get a sense from you about what that market could potentially do.
Well, actually, this is something that, as you probably saw my eyes going off the screen, we have looked at, and I have been looking at that. If we were to go for a completely open market with betting and gaming, which yep. isn't going to happen, launching mid-26, let's say 2030 figures, because that's where it goes out to, we would have the total onshore betting and gaming market at, and a random guess here that this is in euros, 3.6 billion euros onshore, 900 million offshore, 79%, 80% onshore channelization. Now, if we go for a monopoly market, so monopoly betting, but with 15 licenses for gaming, which is what they're going for, we get an onshore market at 1.5 billion, an offshore at 2 billion, so 3.5 billion in total, or only 43% onshore. Now, again, going back to what the Netherlands, you know, you could go, well, hang on, that's a good thing. We've got people spending 1.5 billion, not 3.5 billion, you know, onshore. That's a good thing. And yes, the overall market we have is smaller at 3.5 versus 4.5, but we have the illegal market and more than double the size of what it would be with onshore. So, you know, is it better to have a smaller onshore market, but half of that is actually, you know, you save 2 billion, let's say, on the onshore, that's lower player losses, but it's actually only 1 billion less, and the billion that's being spent offshore is with no player protection, and it's balancing the market growth and player protection. And I don't know anyone, apart from maybe TAB and their partner, who could possibly, and even I think they'd struggle to do it straight face, could possibly argue that having a monopoly on betting is going to be positive for player protection. And
it is tricky, but at the same time, could the casino legislation almost incentivize these companies? Because as part of the monopoly being, you know, kind of like enshrined in law, these companies have been asked to pull back from the market, and I think a number will, because obviously you then have the benefit of the casino legislation, and with that enforcement action, it feels like the play is people push these people out of sports, but then by dangling the carrot of, you know, kind of online casino and being able to enter that vertical, that will incentivize them to pull back. And the thing is, like, because it's a lot of the traditionally the well-known brands globally that are kind of in or around that market, and most of them have, you know, kind of like expressed their interest in entering a regulated market, because of the product, the visibility, the marketing capabilities, they are going to be the best known brands. So
you're a well-known operator who yeah. is operating there because the legislation doesn't really say you can't explicitly. You get told now that's the case, okay, you pull out because you're going to have to list a company or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, I think we're tracking about 1,500 brands targeting the New Zealand market. And there's more than that. We then just assume a long tail. So how many of those are that going to apply to? Okay, 15 who decide they want to get an iCasino license. And then maybe there's another 100, 200 who kind of see the letter and go, okay, won't bother. There's still well over 1,000. You call multiple 1,000 brands attacking it, yeah? And this is one where, you know, it's suddenly better. Some of these better known brands, let's say for sake of argument, not saying they're targeting it, but let's say a big known sports book who decides they're pulling out either because they're listed or for whatever social reasons, or they want to get a casino license. It then makes it more attractive, actually, for you. Some of these larger, better brands are pulling out. It makes it more attractive for these other brands to start targeting it more. So when you say enforcement, asking someone to leave yeah, enforces it for a small part of the market, but not everyone. And yeah, it's just, I just don't see why people wouldn't view this as a market where, and we don't encourage grey market operators, but if you're looking at something as a grey market operator, I'd look at it and go, okay, cool, a lot of my well-known competition's exiting the market either to go onshore or just to pull back from it. This becomes a much more attractive market for me to focus on.
I think that's fair. And mindful of the fact you have a call.
Well, one thing I wanted to do is I wanted to play a game, Robin.
Okay.
I kind of think that... yeah, I've got 1 minute. I kind of think that... when you listen to professional podcasts, they always have, I don't know if they're called games, like little bits in it where they do every week or every day or whenever they do the
right.
So I'm going to click a random country. And if we're very good, well, we don't have time to talk about now. So I was going to say, what do we know about that country?
Okay.
In terms of gambling, not generally, although probably both go into it. Or whether we have to do one, the next random country. Or whether we have to prepare for something on it next week. There you okay. go.
What have we got? Peru. That's an excellent one. So we're going to talk about Peru next week.
We've actually got tax data now about it, so that's helped.
Well, yeah, we've got tax data. We've obviously got connections in the market. Shout out Gonzalo Perez of Apuesta Total.
And something a bit more random, Niger. So there we go.
Excellent. So we're talking about Niger and Peru next week.
Probably a lot more on Peru than Niger.
I suspect so.
Okay.
Right. So, everyone, thank you very much for listening. As always, this has been episode 10. We're in double figures. Can you believe it?
We actually have done 11 episodes. We just cancelled one because it was so bad.
Yeah, it wasn't our best. But we weren't going to tell people about that, about the lost episode.
And they're thinking, God, if there's one that was so bad you didn't put up, it must have been terrible.
Yeah, and to think about what we've been putting out, I mean...
Yeah,
it's the world was not ready for it.
It could be archived for our 100th anniversary.
Well, funnily enough, on our other far more successful podcast, we're about to record episode 50 with a very special guest. So let's aim for that. Right. On that note, thank you very much for listening once again. And this has been another episode of Right to the Source with Robin Harrison and Ed Birkin. We will see you next time.